Let's set our motivation for our talk and our time together this morning. The verse that we're looking at today is really about overcoming the difficulties or the challenges to our compassion. The verse says, "While the enemy of your own mind is unsubdued, the enemy of your own anger is unsubdued. Though you conquer external foes, they will only increase. Therefore, with the militia of love and compassion, subdue your own mind." This is the practice of bodhisattvas. And so we think about compassion, we talk about compassion, people who come here, who come to our classes, we talk about compassion. But this metaphor of the militia of compassion, bringing together the army of our collected aspiration, internal, our own collection of compassionate thoughts, to overcome our anger, really has a huge impact in the world. And so to have taken time out on a beautiful Sunday morning, who knows, it may be the last sunny day we see for a while. And yet, something in each person's heart really inspired them to come up the hill, drive quite a long way for most of you, and be here. So to honor and rejoice in that wish, that aspiration to have a deeper understanding of ourselves and to cultivate our good qualities and to really think about how cultivating our compassion, overcoming our own obstacles, really contributes to this idea of creating peace in a chaotic world. So rejoice in that, and let's set our motivation for that. And that as we cultivate our own good qualities of compassion, as well as loving kindness, generosity, and so forth, thinking that it, with that effort, brings benefit to all living beings, and also creates the causes or the pathways for ourselves to realize our full potential. And so let's do all of our sharing today with that in mind. So we have been, I think this is year two, that we have been spending our Sharing the Dharma days taking a look at this book by Venerable Children. It's called Don't Believe Everything You Think. And the more we examine this title, the more brilliant I think this should be a slogan for our daily lives. Don't believe everything you think. It's a commentary on a text written in Tibet, written in Tibetan, called The 37 Practices of Bodhisattvas. And the poem, it's a long poem. You may have heard us, sometimes we chant it one day a week. It describes ways of training the mind to use the difficulties of daily life as a part of our spiritual practice, so that we don't get overwhelmed with the vicissitudes of life, and it talks about some antidotes that are usually pretty counterintuitive. Now, if our usual way of dealing with problems actually was effective, then we'd all maybe be Buddhists by now. So, to have some suggestions that are counterintuitive might be really helpful. So today's verse, we're on verse 20, and I'll read it again. She subtitles it, Working with Anger. So that's our topic today. Right. While the enemy of your own anger is unsubdued, Though you conquer external foes, they will only increase. Therefore, with the militia of love and compassion, subdue your own mind. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. So just to fill people in, a bodhisattva is a being who has cultivated their compassion and loving kindness to such an extreme, to such a point in their mind, that their only wish is actually to relieve the unsatisfactory nature of existence for every single being. And to that end, they have come to the conclusion that the only way to really affect that change is to completely purify their own minds and become what we call a Buddha, fully awakened being, whose mind is completely free of all disturbing attitudes, like no anger, no craving, no jealousy, no pride. I mean, that alone is a pretty radical fact. So what's left, if you remove all that stuff, wisdom, compassion, loving kindness, and it's infinite. And with that mind of loving compassion, kindness, and the wisdom, which then brings about a spontaneous skill that makes it possible for that being to be able to benefit everybody and anybody, the bodhisattva then has this as its aspiration. That person, that man or woman, spends their lives cultivating these qualities so that they can be of benefit in that way. So to train like a bodhisattva, if we really want to cultivate love and compassion, then we're also holding bodhisattvas as the model for how we too can improve our own minds. It improves our life right now, and it also really inspires and makes our life meaningful, you know, to think that it's possible to start expunging a little bit of that stuff that's in our mind. I don't know, for some reason this came up to me yesterday, but there was a time in my life, I think it must have been when there were still cassette tapes. People remember this? And also even magnetic tape. I used to get so stressed out that I would fantasize that there must be some sort of magnetic tape eraser I could put on my head and clean all the garbage out. And I was thinking, you know, the Buddha's teachings actually do that. It doesn't have the same effect. Instantly, like I can't just go and have it all gone. But so that's what we're working with in this text in general, is how to transform our minds incident by incident, actually. There's no magic wand way of doing this. So the practice of bodhisattvas is something that we can aspire to, see them as role models, and know that we have exactly the same potential. No, it's one of the most, maybe revolutionary is not the wrong word. One of the most revolutionary things I think about the Buddha's teachings coming to the West is this idea that we are not fundamentally flawed, we are not fundamentally doomed, but that our potential is to be this, to be completely awake, and to have a heart of love and compassion infinitely developed. And every single being has this potential. So if we sit with that idea and look at some of the reasonings that prove it, which we won't go into today, then you start to get a little bit inspired, like, well, yeah, I can do this. And with that wish to do those things, then talking about using the militia of love and compassion to overcome our anger isn't so daunting as it might be when we hear it at first. Right. So there's a few kind of vocabulary things I think that's interesting to look at. I mean, we all have enemies, right? External foes. Yes or no? Yes. Some people say yes. Some people say no. I think enemy is a tough word for us. I don't really have enemies. There are people I don't like, but I don't really have enemies. There are people who drive me crazy. But I don't really have any enemies. I wouldn't call them enemies. Often they're the people I love the most. So I can't call them enemies. truly in the moment where they are driving us crazy, in that moment, they're on the opposite side of us, right? The main thing is they're the obstacle to our happiness. They're not doing what we want. They're not doing things the way we want them. We're not doing the things that they are not doing the things we think they should be doing. In that moment, they become an enemy. That external foe. We all have them. It's not just the people. I mean, sometimes our computer is our external foe. Maybe often. Sometimes the car is the external foe. But the real damage happens when it's the person. That's the external foe. But here, our author is telling us it's not the external foe that's the enemy. Enemy is our own anger. I think this is a little hard to swallow. You can't tell me that that person who is always, what? Putting the garbage in the wrong place. The person who every day is leaving their stuff in the aisle so that I have to trip over it. I have to trip over it. You can't tell me that that person is not the problem. The person is always the problem. Yes? Isn't that how we think? Yes. Yes, a few little, we think the person is the problem. If they would only behave. If they would only do what we agreed they were going to do. If they would only think of other people, for goodness sake. Then I'd be happy. They would behave properly, and I would be happy. Yes? Yes. Our partners? Yes. Children? For sure. Our parents? Co-workers? The people we volunteer with? Why don't they get it? They don't have the same committee training that I have. People who don't know how to work on a team. Yes. People who aren't self-starters and don't know how to work alone. Yes. People who don't follow through with deadlines. Yes. People who expect me to meet the deadlines. They are the problem. And what is my response when all these things come up? Do we get angry? Okay, some of us don't get angry, I see. But, you know, anger has a lot of socialized finer masks. I don't get angry, but I do get irritated. I don't get angry, but I can get annoyed. Yes? I'm never angry, but sometimes I get a little grumpy. What are some of our other synonyms? Oh, yes, I get teed off. Hacked off, pissed off, but not angry. Not like furious, enraged, angry. But all of these words, frustrated. Frustration, that was a favorite one of mine. Oh no, I'm not angry, I'm just frustrated. But from the Buddhist view, they're all anger. So, you know, we should look at a little bit, what is the definition of anger? I'm going to do it quite critically. I wrote it out. The definition, a mind, this is from the Buddhist point of view, a mind that cannot bear a person, object, situation, or idea. Cannot bear it. Does that sound right? When something comes up that irritates you or is, you know, confronting, a mind that can't bear it. In that moment, I think it's true. It certainly is true for me. It's like if I could bear it, then I wouldn't be reacting to it, right? If I could bear it, it would just like... Whew. Now, sometimes it's even hard to imagine that someone could just go over something like that. A mind that cannot bear a person, object, situation, or idea, so harbors ill will and wants to either harm it or get away from it. Something comes along and irritates us. I trip over somebody's shoes in the middle of the doorway. We want to either punch right then or just leave. Get out of the way. And so, you know, anger also has many expressions. We can be verbal and spew it out, and I think probably all of us have had some experiences of doing that. And then there's the other kind where you just go crunch down iceberg. What's wrong? We know this, right? Either we do it, the people we love do it, or both. I think we're not in a position for neither in most cases, right? So it has many, many different ways of expressing. Venerable says here in the book, as long as the seed of anger exists within us, we will have enemies. So the point here is to be looking at, no matter how much we project and externalize that thing as the problem, one thing to investigate is that true? Don't believe everything you think. Is it true that that person is the problem? One thing that we can do to kind of begin to examine that is, well, does everybody see that person in the same way? Everybody? Now we can recruit our friends. There's seven people in the office. One person sides with the creep, and the rest of us know they're a creep. But that one person doesn't think they're a creep. The boss doesn't think they're a creep. That's why we think they're a creep. The boss doesn't think they're a creep. Their husband doesn't think they're a creep. Is that person fundamentally a creep just because we five say so? No. So what the teachings tell us is that that seed of anger is actually in our own mind. And when it gets provoked, when that seed rises and ripens, then that is sort of the lens through which we look at the world. So we're projecting this evilness on the other person who's driving us crazy. And what does it mean to be driven crazy? It sounds like they are doing it to me. They drive me crazy. They don't listen to me. They don't understand me. They don't do it the way I said we would do it. They don't behave in the way that they agreed to. Victim-y, isn't it? Poor me. They. If they would just behave the way I think they should, whether or not I've communicated to them, although often we have, then whose lens is the problem? Right? It's ours. Ours is the lens that's looking at and coloring that whole person or that whole situation as the problem. So, what's wrong with that? Why not? Serves them right anyway if I tell them all they need it. They'll be better people for it, I'm sure. Right? Venerable Children has something here. I don't know if I'll be able to find it. But it's like how we are. We have this, it's part of our distorted thinking, things we shouldn't believe the way we think, where we think if we just keep telling them how much they're messing up, they'll get it. Keep telling them how much they're messing up, they'll start loving us after all. Has that ever worked? Oh, people hate, they don't want to know what your idea is about how bad they are. It's not very helpful. we can communicate if there are difficulties without the anger being the color that we project onto people. So what's the what are the difficulties? What are the disadvantages? Why does it matter if we get angry or not?
Makes them miserable.
Makes ourselves miserable. Why else?
It distracts from the real issue.
That's true. Distracts from the real issue. Is it true? Are we happy when we're angry? Does it ever feel good? That moment of triumph, I really told them. No? No, it's kind of a nasty feeling after that moment, isn't it? Anybody ever destroyed a relationship by angry words? Really, it's possible. You can completely destroy. And sometimes those are repairable, and sometimes they're not. So this quality of anger that we have, you know, it happens personally, and it happens internationally. We look at, you know, anger, the seed of anger in our mind is what's behind every single conflict there is. And yet, I think it's so much a part of our existence, so much a part of our society that we kind of can shine on it, you know. Unless they're mad at me. If they're mad at me, then I have to fix that immediately. Why? By making them wrong. I mean, how to do that? But other than that, my anger, justified. Pretty much, we think our anger is justified, right? But what this verse is telling us is our anger has nothing to do with the other person. Our anger has nothing to do with the other person. Is that, can we believe that? Do you think that's true? I think it's hard to swallow that one. But if you really think about it, if the same person did the same action to somebody else who doesn't have the button that I do, they wouldn't react at all. Have you ever seen that? Where somebody has just done something that just absolutely makes you furious, and they do it to somebody else. Same person does it to somebody else. No problem. Fine. Right? So this proves, this is one of the proofs, that the anger is actually here. It's here in our own mind. You know, one thing I think that, and it's something I'm really working with these days, is looking at how much expectation gets in the way there. You know, I have an expectation that someone is going to do something, or we have some agreements, and so I have this expectation that people should do it. Verbal Children calls these rules of the universe. I expect people to do what we agreed to do. Well, that's just my expectation. I haven't even checked in that says, do you have the same feeling about this agreement? And I haven't checked in that says, was there something that came up for you that made it not possible to do this? I don't. I jump immediately to, you're supposed to. So we all have our various rules in the universe. You know, people should always like me. People should always consider me when they're doing something that affects me. Me. And when people cross those rules of the universe, our own rules of the universe, then our anger is really quite justified. But this verse is saying, nope, do something else. With the militia of love and compassion, subdue your own mind. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. There's a story about when the Buddha was meditating too, under the Bodhi tree, on the night that he attained his complete awakening, that he had all these temptations, you might call them,
the worldly mind that, you know, but kind of came at him as he was developing his deeper, deeper, and deeper, deeper levels of realization. And one of them was Mara, who is sort of the personification of our afflictive emotions, sent armies against him. So here's, you know, they have the image of the Buddha sitting peacefully under the Bodhi tree and these elephants and armies with spears and weapons and, you know, marching, marching, marching on the Buddha. And they say that his loving compassion was so great that when they shot arrows at them in the air, the arrows turned into flowers. And the Buddha had this rain of flowers. So when I think of this image, the militia of love and compassion, it brings to mind to me this story about, oh, an army of arrows that are actually flowers of love. What would that be like to cultivate this heart of loving kindness, to replace our anger? So that's the principal antidote. Now, we don't go from furious to raining flowers. Like that. Or if we do, they're poison flowers, right? Yeah. So we have to really think about what are the antidotes to our anger in order to work with it. Like, what's the opposite, and how do we get there? So one of the things that we really spend a lot of time focusing on is how much we are all alike in this fundamental motivation that we're all trying to be happy. And people who have been coming here or coming to the classes in Spokane, I mean, we talk about this a lot, but it is so fundamental to changing our own mind is, you know, as long as the enemy is out there, as long as the our foe, our external foe is out there, we have a projected image of them as different and evil and not like me. And, you know, maybe they have smoke coming out of their ears or horns on their head, or, you know, in our mind, of course. But if we stop for just a moment and think, whoa, this is a sentient being just like me. And the thing we have in common, absolutely no argument, is that they want to be happy. I want to be happy. They don't want any difficulty. I don't want any difficulty. They want to be happy. And if we reflect on this a lot, it's really true. Every single thing we do, and we have to look at ourselves first, every single thing we do is driven by our wish to be happy, to experience pleasure, to not have any hassle. That's all we're going for. And it's not, you know, when I first heard this, I thought, oh, surely I have a more noble motivation than that. As Holiness the Dalai Lama says, this is what kind of the most, it's a wonderful spiritual recognition that we all want to be happy. So if we spend some time really thinking about this, I want to be happy. I don't want any hassle. I'm upset because this person is thwarting my happiness. But they want to be happy too, just as much as I do, equally. Equally, and they have an equal right to be happy. So if we begin to really recognize that about each other, then we can relax a little bit. Oh, they're just trying to be happy. I don't necessarily like how they're going about it. I may not think it's going to be very effective for them, but then I do a lot of things that aren't so effective for my own happiness too. So getting to this, you know, kind of a catchphrase, they're trying to be happy. They just want to be happy, just like me. Not in a position of higher up, oh yeah, they want to be happy, look how stupidly they're behaving. No. But getting to the real heart of it, they want to be happy just like I do. So that's one of the things that we can use as a trigger. And if they want to be happy just like I do, then we can calm down. Take our minds maybe to an even place. And then, maybe, from that place, we can wish them. May they be happy. May they be happy. Just like the meditation we did this morning, right? Is that what you did, the loving kindness? May they be free from suffering, anxiety, and fear. And I'll tell you, we have to do these steps. We have to get our mind to neutral before you can go. If you're in a state of anger, we have to get our mind to neutral before we can go into wishing them happiness. Otherwise, it's really kind of just plastered on there. But we can get our mind to neutral if we look at our commonality and really look at this person as a person. When I do this meditation, often I really, this works for me, I really bring people's faces to mind. You know, if we really look at each other, we see all, the older we get, the more it shows. All the wear and tear of our lives is right here. Every disappointment, every pain, it just gets marked right in our face. And you see it even in young people. It's there, the look in our eyes. To imagine that person's face, oh my gosh, they just want to be happy. And we can see all the ways that we aren't and haven't been. You know, it's right there. So for me, that's very heart-softening. Everybody, I think, has their own method, but it's something that really, for me, makes kind of reduces us all to that same level. Wanting to be happy. Experiencing a lot of difficulties in our life. Bar none. I don't care how wealthy you are. I don't care how great your marriage is. I don't care how many wonderful children you have or that they all actually still like you. It's the, you know, we all have these difficulties. And if we think about that and open our, well, I think saying open our hearts might be a little too far to go. But if we really look at that, then the effect may be that the heart opens. And with the militia of love and compassion, subdue your own mind. Lots of space there then for communication that might be different than if I spoke out of anger. Something like that. Now, we have 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years of habit that doesn't go that way. So we also need to have the humility to recognize that, you know, we're changing a habit here. Worse than quitting smoking, worse than getting off sugar or whatever kind of addictive habit we've had, overcoming our impulse to respond out of anger is, you know, it takes time, it takes effort, and it's not, and the place we also have to be very kind is with ourselves. Oh, you got angry again, you stupid jerk. What kind of nun do you think you are? Whoever, you know. It's those voices in our heads are also quite judgmental, critical. So we need to listen to those voices too. Say, well, hush, shh, 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 shh. Okay. Okay. But I made an effort. At least I caught it in retrospect. And now I'm going to think about what's another way I could have responded to that, learn from this, and go on. So that's how we change our habits, right? So, Venerable Children, in this chapter, concludes with, let me see. We subdue our anger and belligerence with the militia of love and compassion. If you want to stop having external enemies, then attack the hatred and resentment in your own mind. Oh, this is the part I liked. So with a militia of love and compassion. Just as a militia trains and works together consistently and doesn't give up until the enemy is conquered, so do we develop very strong love, wanting others to be happy, and strong compassion, wanting them to be free of suffering. So we're developing our love. We're developing our compassion in the place of the angry response in our minds. These two things cannot exist in the mind at the same time. Love
this places anger. And when we practice and cultivate the attitude of love in daily life, the more that's the habit of the mind, the less room there is for anger to arise. Right? Makes sense. So, one of the great things about this book, there's many great things about this book, but is that when she was writing it, Venerable had people sit down and tell how they practice each of these verses. So there's personal stories, personal sharings of people. So I'm going to read the one from Diane. There's a couple of really good ones on this one from people. Venerable Trigen does a lot, has for many years done a lot of work in prisons, and the inmates, we're not calling them inmates anymore, the incarcerated people have sent in lots of stories about how they use this very text to work with their minds in incredible circumstances where the anger comes up. But I like this particular story because it talks about the process of transforming that mind. So, this is written by an Abbey nun before she was a nun. Before meeting the Dharma, I reacted to all those around me with frustration, harsh words, and anger if my needs were not met. I would project my dissatisfaction onto those around me, often the ones I held most dear. I changed friends, jobs, and relationships, but kept meeting external foes. Miserable and confused, I only wanted to be happy and not have this suffering. Continuing to seek happiness outside of myself, I felt hopeless, especially as anger and disappointment were my associates. Only after I met the Buddha's teachings did I start subduing my anger and begin to understand that the only way to find peace and happiness was to change my habitual pattern of thinking that happiness was dependent on how those around me behaved. In an attempt to subdue my anger, I tried to force it out of my mind with disgust. This did not work. Transforming my mind by using the same type of mind state that I wanted to be free from didn't work. Getting angry at ourselves doesn't work to free ourselves from anger. Right? This is a place we get so confused. I'm going to use anger to overcome anger. I'm going to use hatred to overcome hatred. Hello? The self-centered attitude... I began the arduous task of applying gentleness when my mind was frustrated. The self-centered attitude would mock me, saying this was a very stupid method. I practiced ignoring that mind that discounted my efforts and repeatedly brought gentleness into my mind. At first, I was often unable to generate gentleness for myself. I couldn't even find that feeling inside myself. So I would think of another person's gentleness, or my cat's gentleness towards me. Once I had the feeling of gentleness in my mind, so getting familiar with a different way of thinking, right? Once I had the feeling of gentleness in my mind, I would practice offering it to myself. I did this practice repeatedly, and gradually it became easier. This allowed me to be kinder to myself, which opened the way to cultivating love and compassion for others. In this way, my anger is more subdued. I aspire one day to be able to find peace and happiness no matter what the external circumstance. Very beautiful. And a very clear kind of step-by-step sharing of the process. Right? So we need to recognize that it's something that doesn't benefit us. We have to start there. And that may be thinking about the disadvantages of anger in our lives. And then so looking at what are the opposites? Gentleness, kindness, love, compassion. How do I bring that to my mind? Gosh, I hardly have any. It's a little daunting to look into one's own mind and go, you know, I don't think you have much love. But we can cultivate that. We can cultivate that by being gentle with ourselves, getting familiar with that quality. And then we're able to bring it to others. One thing I just wanted to add, we've been talking about this in the Spokane class
where we've been looking at one of Venerable Children's other books on living with an open heart, that she co-wrote with psychologist Russell Coltz, who's at Eastern Washington University here. And the psychology method, or acronym, of analyzing this is also very helpful. It's they use this thing called RAIN, R-A-I-N. The steps are to recognize when we're angry, because often we don't. I mean, sometimes I don't know I'm angry till I hear the words coming out of my mouth, and that is too late. It's really sad. We're getting better, but recognize. Accept it. Not accept it as in, okay, honey, you're so angry, I think you should just go for it. But accept it in, oh, look, I'm angry and it's okay. It's angry, I'm angry, and I'm going to work on it. But I'm not going to hate myself for having it. Investigate. What are the real causes? Not they did blah, 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 which is where I start. But they did blah, 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 and my button around that is what? Well, I expected something different. Well, on what basis did you have that expectation? My own rules of the universe. Aha. Investigate. And then the fourth one is to not identify with the anger. So this one I haven't really touched on very much, but it's this idea of I am not my angry mind. The anger is like the word they use is what is that word? Comes and goes in the mind. No, but that'll work. That it comes and goes like a cloud across the clear sky. It's not me. When we say my anger, we really grab onto it. It's like, whoa, my anger becomes a part of me. But if we separate from that and not identify, it's just anger arising. Causes and conditions came together. This thing, the seed of anger arose in my mind, boom. And then it's gone. Same with other people's anger. Adventitious is the word I was going for. Comes and goes. And so if we don't identify with it, we don't make ourselves, I am the angry person, then it's also easier to change the habit. Because if we identify with it and go, oh, I am my anger, then you don't really want to separate from it, because who would I be otherwise? But if we don't identify with it and just see it as something that's arising in the mind, a thought, it's a thought, it's a thought, what's a thought? Then we can let it go. Okay. Thoughts, questions, comments, arguments? Brian?
Dealing with people that we perceive as, you know what I mean? That's plenty to work with, and I'm working with that myself. But there's times when other people perceive us as anger, and then for me, that's more when they become an enemy, because somebody that perceives me as an enemy and wants to cause me harm, me to see what's harm. And it's a harder thing to work with sometimes, because yeah. It's not me being annoyed at them, it's me trying to have compassion and respond to somebody who wants to hurt me.
Yeah, that raises the stakes, escalates it. Huh? Oh, sorry. So, Brian's saying someone really is intentionally trying to harm, then it's harder to develop compassion for that person. Right. Yeah. True. And, you know, when we're talking about cultivating a compassionate heart or using the militia of love and compassion, it's not saying, therefore, you need to stand in the way of harm and allow that to happen. By any means. No, we're talking about a state of mind here. So if there really is genuine harm, then getting out of the way is important, is essential. You know, it doesn't help the person to allow them to continue to harm either, much less ourselves. But then, looking at our own mind, the steps are pretty much the same. Trying to understand that whatever devastating things this person is doing, They're trying. Somehow, they think it's going to make them happy. I have a button about people being angry at me, too. But I'll tell you, it is my button. And it's something helpful to begin to learn, that I have begun to learn about anger, that if it is just a thought arising in the mind, and I can examine my own mind and see that that's true, there's the seed of anger is there, it gets triggered, the anger arises. The same thing is happening in that other person's mind. Therefore, it's arising simply due to causes and conditions. That's all. Therefore, it doesn't have anything to do with me. If they are angry, that's their thing. And the more I can separate from that and not take it personally, not think, oh, it's all about me, because it's not, actually. They may think it is. They may have projected that on me, but it's not mine. It's not me. And so the more I can learn to separate myself from that and not even accept it, the less plugged in I get by the fact that somebody is angry. That also gives more space then to say, okay, they are just trying to be happy. I happen to be the obstacle at the moment. It's not anything I did, actually, but, you know, I'm also hung up, attached on people thinking well of me. I'm attached on approval. I'm attached to people liking me. So that's my button. That's my attachment. There's no rule that says people have to like me. So I have to let go of that. But then when we get to the issue of physical harm, get out of the way, and then we work on cultivating this understanding that they want to be happy. They want to be free from suffering. It's not that we condone the action, but we understand the person as a human being who is really suffering. People don't lash out and hurt people when they're happy. So we can start to look at it from that point of view and really have a sense of wishing for them to be happy. You know, Venerable Children have been quite inspired in watching her talk about how she practices with the ISIS people and trying to imagine what it would be like to have a mind that wants to harm so intently. Like, why? What happiness, what satisfaction, what fulfillment could they want in doing that action? Because they think, I mean, surely they do have that, right? It's inspiring to me to hear her talk like that, to then try to get inside the mind of the person that I'm wanting to cultivate compassion for. And in truth, if we're really developing love and compassion, then those people are the very ones who are our teachers. I don't have to work very hard to love the people who like me. Easy! And I can think I'm a very loving person until somebody who doesn't like me is in my face, and then I've got to work at it. So we also then really think about the kindness even of the enemy in helping us develop our love and compassion. Does that help? Some help? Venerable Children's book on working with anger is, I don't know, 200 and some odd pages of ways to think about this and ways to work with this. So if this is an issue in your life, or if it's an issue, whether it's in your own anger or you're responding to somebody else's, it's a good book to take a look at. Because it has many different ways of looking at how we take criticism, how we take all kinds of ways that anger arises for us and works with the antidotes. Yeah, Peter?
A couple of things got triggered. Just the consideration of the ISIS people. Can you go back to the fundamental definition of anger that you read?
Basically.
It was a sentence.
Yeah, it was a sentence, but basically...
What was it?
Anger, from the Buddhist definition, anger exaggerates the negative qualities of a person, idea, something. Exaggerates and projects these negative qualities on them and cannot bear.
that that's the key.
Cannot bear.
Bear.
Yeah.
Bear. Go back to the, see, this is what I get from the ISIS consideration.
Yeah.
This is not bearing.
Yeah, they cannot.
To that magnitude.
Right. Well, I don't understand what you mean.
The question is how could someone or a group of people who are just trying to be happy instigate behavior such as that?
Right.
The possible answer is they cannot bear.
They cannot bear.
There's something they're not
They're not able to bear. Right. Okay. So within the ISIS situation then,
well,
I'm trying to imagine that level of harm or destruction that seems to be coming. And how could they do that? Then going back to the key, they cannot bear something.
What is it they cannot bear?
There's something they cannot bear.
Which means, what is it that I'm not bearing?
Right.
When I'm reacting to this.
Yes, and so when I react, then I can't bear something too.
And the other, from the teaching, what differentiates compassion from love?
So the Buddhist definition is quite concise. So that love is a wish for someone to have happiness and the causes of happiness. Compassion is the wish for someone to be free of suffering, pain, difficulty, and the causes of that. So they go together, but they, you know, they have a slightly different focus.
With your definition, it doesn't stop at bearing. It says, and then feel ill will.
That's right.
So that's the thing with being able to deal with your situation. You have to deal with sometimes, but not go into a place where you bear ill will.
Yeah, that's point. So
these people that are like what ISIS is doing, they're using violence to try and solve their situation. Or if we respond back to them, we could do find a different way to respond.
Yeah, we try to. So Brian is right. So we ended the definition here too soon. So it's exaggerating the negative qualities, being unable to bear that situation, and then having ill will and wishing to either harm or get away. So that reaction of destroying, you know, it's the response to not being able to bear. We try to destroy.
Yeah.
Small scale, large scale. Okay, well, let's sit quietly for a moment. And just think about any point in the talk that you want to take home. And then we'll take all the positive energy generated from just exploring this topic. And really think that to any degree that we are able to lessen the arising of anger in our minds and replace that with love and compassion, there's tremendous benefit for ourselves and others. So rejoice in that. And we can dedicate all the goodness of that so that everyone who's experiencing the kind of pain that would bring about anger may be relieved in some way. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forever.